Good afternoon. My name is Jane Lambert, and I'm Deacon Jerry's wife. And I volunteer in the Courage office as much as I can. I'm honored today to introduce Immaculée. And I've had the opportunity to actually hear her speak twice. She came to my diocese and spoke to my bishop in a group. And then a couple weeks later was able to speak also to my parish. And Father Check happened to be with us on that trip. So I've been able to enjoy her speaking. And I've read a couple of her books. And I have just been so touched by everything. And I hope you will be too. Speaking of her books and materials, we do have some back here in the back. They'll only be sold after this talk. And then they're going to be packed up and they'll go when she goes. Immaculée will also stay and remain and sign any of the books that you might like to purchase today. So that's as far as we go with the materials that we have here. I would like to, first of all, give you some background, and then following that background, Friar Roderick's going to show us a short video, and then Immaculée will speak. Now, as background for Immaculée, on April 6, 1994, the Rwandan president's plane was shot down over the capital city of Kigali. His assassination of the Hutu president sparked months of massacres of Tutsi tribe members throughout the country. Not even small rural communities like Immaculée's were spared from the house-by-house slaughtering of men and women and children. To protect his only daughter from rape and murder, Immaculée's father told her to run to a local pastor's house for protection. The pastor quickly sheltered Immaculée and seven other women in a hidden 3x4 bathroom. For the next 91 days, Immaculée and the other women huddled silently in this small room while the genocide raged outside the home and throughout her country. While in hiding, anger and resentment were destroying Immaculée's mind, body, and spirit. It was then that Immaculée turned to prayer. Prior to going to the pastor's home, Immaculée's father, a devout Catholic, gave her a set of rosary beads. She began to pray the rosary as a way of drowning out the anger inside of her and the evil outside the house. It was that turning point towards God and away from hate that saved Immaculée. In addition to finding faith, peace, and hope during those 3 months of hiding, Immaculée also taught herself English. She used only a Bible and a dictionary, and she spent countless hours in that cramped bathroom learning her third language. After 91 days, Immaculée was finally liberated from her hiding place, only to face a horrific reality. She emerged from that small bathroom weighing only 65 pounds and finding her entire family brutally murdered, with the exception of one brother who was studying abroad. She also found nearly 1 million of her extended family, friends, neighbors, and fellow Rwandans massacred. After the genocide, Immaculée came face to face with the man who killed her mother and one of her brothers. During months of physical, mental, and spiritual suffering, Immaculée was still able to offer the unthinkable, telling that man, "I forgive you." Well, I'd like to introduce Immaculée. Oh, and first of all, we will see the video. It's a very short one, and then Immaculée will speak to us.
I was born in Rwanda. Rwanda is a tiny country located in the Central Africa. It was, and still is, one of the most beautiful places in the world. Very green and perfect tropical weather. My village was in Kibuye, Our house was on a hill that overlooked Lake Kivu. My mom and dad were teachers. They were very good parents who were very respected in the village. In my family, we were four children. I was one girl among three boys. We loved each other a lot. We were very protective until the last time we separated.
There was a rebellion going on, an ethnically based rebellion in Rwanda.
Right after the holiday, I had an exam, really an important exam.
The regime in Rwanda that was responsible for the genocide was a criminal regime. It operated according to the logic of criminal gangs.
So I wrote to my parents and I told them I wanted to stay in school to prepare for my exam.
And the aim of military dictatorship was to preserve power by eliminating that rebellion.
My father said, "We miss you, and you have been away so much, away from us." So I went home.
And it mobilized Hutu gangs known as the Interahamwe militias by stoking their fear of Tutsis based on a history of Tutsi domination and exploitation going back to the Belgian colonial era.
Easter vacation that year changed everything in my life. The president's plane was shot down and the genocide began.
The two leaders died after attending peace talks aimed at ending decades of tribal conflict in the two countries. President Habyarimana of Rwanda and President Ntaryamira of Burundi were killed when their plane came down near the Rwandan capital, Kigali. Both were members of the majority Hutu tribe.
When the president's plane was shot down, it just was chaos. Within less than an hour, you started to hear the gunfire in your own neighborhood, right up close to you. Before, it was always kind of far away, and it's like it just spread everywhere.
And it was a very well-organized program of genocide. It had been established before the plane went down, and it was just waiting for this event or an event like it to click into motion.
These people had lists. They had lists of people that had to be killed. And then it became crazy.
And I remember my father telling me, "We are worried that you might get raped, and we are worried that we can't help you."
They were going home to home, neighborhood to neighborhood, breaking down doors, hacking people to death. Some of the names of Tutsis were being broadcast on the radio.
When I saw Immaculée back in her own home area, and she says to the photographer, "Hey, come and take a picture of me with this man." And I'm asking her, "Who's this man?" And she explains to me, "Well, his brother killed my brother." And I'm like, "Wait, you know, my Western mind is kicking in and I gotta understand who, what, the details and stuff." And she just puts her arm around him and she says, "No, it's okay, it's okay." I just about lost it, because it's not okay. You read in the powerful little museum here in Kigali, a young Rwandan child saying, "If you would have really known me for who I was, you could have never killed me." When I think about heroes here in Rwanda, I think about people like Immaculée who are willing now to share what life is like, going back, touching on it, exploring it. For her to take the time and to visit these places with people like us and let us share in some of that grief and some of that process takes unimaginable courage.
I did hate, of course. I was very angry. During the bathroom time, I couldn't understand how another human being can cause you so much pain. Why? We were all created. We never chose to be who we become. We don't choose our race. We don't choose our tribe. We don't even choose a country where we are born. And I thought that I can pay them back for what they were doing to me. And thank God, I was able to see that that was useless. That was only going to prolong the pain and hatred in this world. I hid in this tiny bathroom for 91 days, and they never found me. But I found myself.
It is such a great joy to be here. A little bit emotional because of the name of your group. I know what it means to be courageous, to go against the waves of the sea and to go against the usual instinct of your body, of your heart, of your anger when wrong is being done to you. And then you're trying to do the right thing. Unless you are in that situation, you will never know how hard that is. And to know that this is a group named after courage, it says a lot. Whatever you're fighting, I have been there. And it is such a great joy to be able to be among yours. I feel like I'm home. I'm a part of you. I'm one of you. Recently, I was in Medjugorje. They told me a story. Actually, somehow, it just made me think of all of us, and especially when I was here. They told me how our tour guide, he told us how, and this is somebody I trust, this story is real. Somewhere in the Vatican, you know, a cardinal who was supposed to follow up the stories of the saint, you know, there was a man who had this gift and who have studied that you can give them your handwriting and they can see your character through your handwriting. Your nature, who you are, if you are a sweet person who is just like a beautiful nature, this, you know, or if you have some flaws in your character. So he took 25 saints, took them to this expert, and said, this is their handwriting. Tell me their character, their nature, who they are. So the man took them and studied them, and he came back and said, you are kidding me. You didn't give me saints, you gave me criminals. He's like, no, really, those are the handwriting of saints. He's like, no, these people are rapists, they are criminals, these people have anger issues, they are just like bad people. What do you mean? Are you trying to just fool me? The man said, no, the cardinal, he said, it is truly saints. But what really was the whole lesson about that, this is a real story. And there were saints who had that kind of nature. But what made them saints? Why these people were the models? Why these people were the people in the end who become the, you know, to help all of us throughout generations to show us the way? Because they were able to resist their nature, to resist and to a point of becoming a saint. They were able to go against the anger that was calling them, do that, don't do, you know, go for that, go hit that person, and they will resist that because through Christ all things are possible. Our Lady used to tell us in Kibeho, whom I love with all my heart, she had been my teacher and my mother. I read her apparitions, not how, oh, a lady appeared in Lourdes, how nice. I go through her ward and say, what do you want? What do you mean? Because I know for sure she can never be wrong. Our Lord have sent her to speak to us, to teach us. She knows our hearts. When she say, pray the rosary, she knows it is necessary. She knows we need it. So I listen to her as a student, not ever to question, just tell me what to do. And somehow it always works. So she really knows that, and whatever she's asking, she knows what is in our hearts. In Rwanda, she used to tell us, I love you, my children. And this was a message for everybody, for the whole world. I love you when you are sinners. I love you when you are weak. I love you when you are broken. I love you when you are beautiful, when you are falling. I love you no matter what. And she would tell us, just hand me your suffering. Hand me your struggles. I am with you. Courage and courageous people are those who dare to rise, but they fall. They are people. They go through obstacles. They go through waves that push them and push them. In Rwanda, we have a proverb, or maybe like I say, something that if somebody wants to wish you good, they tell you, may the wind push you forward always. May you never go back. May the wind never bring you back to the past. So that is a wish of a mother. That is a wish of a father, of a good friend. May the wind push you forward always. And that is not something from a religious person. This is something from just a wise people, knowing that we all need to be pushed ahead of us. And that's okay if you fall, but rise up again and again. And that is the message of Our Lady, I love you. And that really just gave me the courage not to feel that I am, never to feel that I am over because I fell again. Or because I didn't match to what was expected. Or I didn't live how they wanted me to, just to have the courage to rise and say, what does God want? And how can I go for it? Even when I fall, just never to remain there. Let me just keep going. And with the grace of God, all things are possible. And maybe this is also was my story. Maybe some of you have read my book. I was angry. I went through a huge, horrible tragedy. And I really can stand here because I know that some of you, many people have called me and say, your story have touched us. Otherwise, it would not be for any good use to just take you back to the horror I have lived. It was horrible, it was bad. I don't wish anyone to go through what I have seen, to see what I have seen. I remember a time I asked God in my heart, not even just ask God, I ask myself, how does somebody who was not born in Rwanda feels like? They must feel so good. They must thank you every day from morning until night. They must be so happy. Do they know what it is to be here now, where you are being hunted, where they want to kill you for something you have not made? You're just born like that, and they want to kill you, just like that. And I just wished that if only the world knew, they can be so happy. Just thank God for the blessing they have. You know how many people are being hidden today? People are being raped. People are being killed now that we are sitting in this beautiful room. You know how many blessings we have every day that we even forget to be grateful about? So I remember those moments, and I remember to continuously be grateful to God. Not that I am so good at it all the time, but it is something I keep dear to my heart. So I share my story, and I want to share with you, but it is true because many of you have come to me, many people around the world that tell me, your story have changed mine. Your story have made me realize that I can do anything. I remember one man I met, you know, he had a good impact on me. Among the first times I spoke, he told me, he said, you know, I read your book and have lost my mom when I was 4 years old. He's now like 38. And he said, every failure I had, I blamed it to the fact that my mom died when I was four. Well, every relationship that didn't work out well, if I only had a mom, everything could have been good. But since I was not raised by a mom, like everybody, everything is bad. He told me, after I saw what you went through, I picked up my pieces and I started to fight for everything I had. Every job I had, if I don't like it, I'm going to look for another one. But I knew I had to fight for it. And it won't be easy, but I'm not going to give any excuse anymore. And I looked at him like, thank you, just to show me that there is something good coming out of this horrible thing. Another man told me, he said, I was angry with somebody in the family for the past 54 years. And he said, I never thought there was even a possibility to let it go. But he said, after I heard you speak, I went home, and for the first time in those 54 years, I was able to sleep in peace. He didn't even have to say, I forgave. He just said, I slept in peace. And that's, to me, that's what forgiveness is about. It's not about moving some mountains or going to do some actions. It's just right here. That darkness, that cover is gone. It is between you and God. You give yourself that permission to see other people as people who fall, as people who make mistakes. We do, why not them? Why their mistakes are so much bigger than our own? Why can't we just let them be and protect ourselves, not to be a victim, not to go in the hands of somebody who's hurting you, but be able to wish them good as we all do change. So that was really something that helped me a lot. Well, as you saw in the documentary, I lived through the genocide. I was a student in college when the genocide happened. Before that, I had a beautiful family, mom and dad, who cared a lot and who had their own struggle. You know, they got sick. My mother had asthma since I can remember. Remember when I was a teenager, my mom used to laugh at me that when I was 2 years old, I used to tell people that our dinner was pills. You know, because she had to drink so many pills to survive, otherwise she wouldn't breathe. She had bad asthma, but she loved us, she cared. You know, used to offer people pills to drink, yeah, for asthma as a kid. So that's how, however, like I said, we had our own problems, but one thing I thank God for, I am so grateful that love was not broken in my home, that we still loved each other. Despite of all the struggles, I never seen my mom trying to hurt my dad or my dad trying to hurt my mom and all other kids. And it is possible that people can live loving each other and rooting for one another. So I was a student in college when the genocide happened, and I remember I was home for Easter holiday. And my two brothers were home, they were in a boarding school, so they were all just like home for the Easter holiday. I was there, my mom was a teacher and my dad, just having fun and happy and staying a lot at night, a lot of hours to talk to each other. We didn't have TV, we didn't have phones, we didn't have computers. So we had a lot of time to talk to each other. Yeah, ask questions about how was the day, what was going on, and hear if somebody says something that doesn't sound well and ask them questions, or you hear pain in their voice, what is that, what's going on, are you okay? Because you have time. You're not having many directions, things putting your focus in every direction. So I never forgot, though, the day we separated, the day we heard the bad news about the country, what was going to happen to us. Again, you grew up like this, people protecting you. We never had a death in my family. And that was my worst fear, who will die first? You know, my mom, my dad, you know, that's the fear. One morning, my brother came to my room, pushed the door, and gave me the news that the president of the country died that night. I remember jumping out of the bed and screaming to him, oh my God, they're going to kill us. I remember he said, why are they going to kill us? This is a boy who had been in school for maybe 20 years, who have just finished his master's degree, ready to start a job, and though he can still leave, he can leave his wife, but his life. But actually, his life was coming to an end after 20 years of school. So he told me what happened. The president died, I told him. And I remember why I read it. It was like a movie went through my eyes. Oh my God, they will kill us. I can see how many people will die and how we're going to die. Why I say that? We were somehow prepared. Like everything, I think God prepares us in many ways when we're about to go through tragedies. Many times we refuse to listen, but we have seen it. So I remember We used to have a radio, you saw in the documentary, where the government of the leaders of our government, where they have created this radio, they will use journalists to spread hatred among people. So the journalists will be saying things like, one day we will be killing those bad people, the Tutsis. And they will say, give me scotch, give me whiskey, act like they are drunk. And they will say, when we kill them, we kill their children too, because we want to cleanse the country. And then everybody's like, did you hear that? And we don't know who to talk to, because it was coming from the leaders of the country. That was a horrible thing. On the other hand, we were prepared by something beautiful, by the Blessed Mother, Our Lady, the Mother of Jesus. Our Lady appeared in 1981 in Rwanda to a high school student. And one of the main messages she gave was that a horrible thing was going to happen to our country if we did not come back to God, to respect His commandments, if we did not come back to love one another, to forgive one another, to respect one another, and help each other, not judge each other, not push each other down. So we heard all that, and she showed the kids, people killing each other with machetes, holes with dead bodies, blood in a river. And she cried, and the kids used to tell Our Lady, this can never happen to us. In Rwanda, we love each other. And Our Lady said, this will happen if you don't change. And why I share that part of this message, because I can speak about this all day, is especially just one lesson I want you to take away, to know that Our Lady said, if you don't, this will happen. But if you do love one another, respect one another, come back to God, respect His commandment, this will not happen. Pick up your rosaries, ask God for strength, this will not happen. So what really that did to me is to realize the power of our prayers, the power of our faith. She said, go to confession, my children. Be sincere to one another. Don't hide each other bad news. If somebody's about to go through something and go to hide it and let them go through something that can hurt them. Well, that was a lot of hatred. Many people knew they were preparing to kill us, but they never wanted to say something because it was their tribe. So we knew all this somehow through Our Lady and through the radio. And when my brother told me, I just saw the whole country in blood, as Our Lady have said. I came outside, I met my parents, who were really worried. We didn't know what to do, where to go. We put on the radio, we find out the leaders have blocked the borders of the country from the moment the president died. And many people believe that the president was killed by his people because he would not allow them to kill the whole tribe. They knew, he knew it would be on his name. Look at what happened. A million under the mandate of somebody, he knew the world would judge him. So they killed him so that they can blame people for killing him, our tribe. So they started killing people. They blocked the borders. We couldn't go out anymore. We are just like watching and listening to the radio. The radio started to repeat, you know, to report people being killed, family by family, 8 children, mom and dad, and 10 children, and mom and dad. I remember my father saying, this never happened before, where they killed the whole family. But that's why they call it a genocide. The attempt to eliminate a whole group of people. They were cleansing. It wasn't about who they hate. It was eliminating this whole group of people. My parents were people who were loved in the village. Everybody started to come to us, asking what to do. I remember by the second day, we had about 10,000 people. Up to the door of my parents, to the soccer field where my mom was a teacher, they were laying down, children crying, older people, young people, people you never saw, they were there. They were all asking, what do we do? And my father, remember, one of the images I remember of him, he held the rosary. I'm Catholic and I come from a Catholic family. He held the rosary and he was on a big stone and he looked at everybody and he said, if it is a matter of a small group that want to hurt us, we will defeat them. We are many women, many men. We are not going to allow them to scare us and chase us away from our home. Do not be scared. Don't fear. Be strong. Just hold on to your prayers and let's ask God to help us. And then he said, but if it is the government that prepared this, they will do it. I cannot lie to you, because they have the military, they have the police, they block the borders, they have our names. We were registered, Tutsi and Hutus. They knew where we were, so they will kill us if it is them who might do this, prepare this. And then he said, either way, do not be scared. If it is the government, let them take this as a chance God is giving us to repent our sins so we can go to heaven. I remember I looked at him. Everyone looked at him like, what? You tell people how to run and not how to die? I mean, really, is that a possibility? But on the other hand, I thought, somebody believes in heaven this much? My father was not a doctor who is telling you, oh, too bad, you have a sickness, you might die, sorry. He was one of the people who would die. He believes in heaven this much? That actually, let's repent our sins and go to heaven when we are killed? It was something that pushed my faith from somewhere to much higher, to realize that actually somebody can trust and have that faith, that there is something after this who might be dying. We all went quiet. We started to repent. Every sin I have done, every time I disrespected my mom, or I didn't do what she asked me, everything I was repenting, and everyone was. Few minutes later, everybody started to shout. My father came to me. He handed me a rosary and asked me to go to hide. I didn't want to go, but I truly left out of obedience to him. I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I knew how hard it was to protect the family he always tried to protect. Now I'm going to resist when he pays 10,000 here. So I left, and I remember I asked him, but what if something happens to you? He said, I cannot worry about everybody and worry about you, because I was one girl among three boys, and everybody just wanted to see me safe out of that trouble. He sent me to a neighbor who was from the Hutu tribe and who was a Protestant pastor, but somebody my parents loved and trusted. It was another big lesson there. My dad used to tell us, do not judge people because they come from that group, because they come from that country, that race, that religion, that this. He said, always treat people individually as they come to you. If they prove you wrong, then they can hurt you, take your distance. But do not judge and reject people just because they belong here and there. He said, if you do, you will miss out many angels in your life. You don't know who God is going to send you when you need it the most. Many times we keep asking, and God sent the most unlikely person. We push them away. And then, like, God, why are you not answering me? And yet he sent more, but you hate them. And God is love. God doesn't hate, God is love, and he will use all those things to, you know, to reach out to us. Well, I really saw it also in action when my father sent me to the Hutu, completely one of supposedly our enemies, and a Protestant pastor. Completely everything different, and we are completely very Catholic. So I went there. The man was a friend, was a good man too. He put me to sit in the bathroom, 3 by 4 feet. I remember when I looked at the place, I thought, this is too small for me. How can I hide here? 3 by 4 feet? I just had my bed and my whole room in my parents' house. 3 days before, I had a scholarship in a college, and I had my own room too. I was paid to go to school. You mean things can change this quickly? It was just like, no. And I'm complaining, I'm standing, I can't stretch my legs, I can't lay down fully. There is a tiny toilet, there is a shower. And as I was complaining, the man went back and brought 5 more women. Later, he went back and brought 2 more women. We were 8 people in 3 by 4 feet. That was another lesson. You know, when you think things are bad, they can get worse. Take it easy. Whatever is going on, find a way to just make it less dramatic, because it can get worse. It really taught me to work with what I have, more than blaming and who can do and complain about everything, and then it's so bad. I'm like, oh, it's bigger, and then what? And when we complain, actually, I think we make it bigger. In really life, not like maybe in that such experience. But anyhow, we were eight, and we found a room to sit in. We literally had to sit on the top of each other. The youngest was 7 years old, the elder was 55. Others were 12, I think another one was maybe 18, I was 23, so they were younger, but one lady was 55. We sat together, the man told us not to speak to one another. This was at night when he showed us that room. Not to speak to one another, not to make any noise, not even to flush the water of the bathroom until somebody else is flushing the water in the next bathroom. So I remember sitting there and remembering a story my parents have said before. This was the only home that had two bathrooms in one home in the whole village. I come from a very poor area. Two bathrooms. And I remember, okay, so we are in this one. It's true, they have a next one. And this is what have happened. This man, some years before, and I'm sharing this for a reason, because I think if you really want to see things you to be grateful about, you can see them. And somehow they pick you up. We can focus on the bad, but if we want to focus on the good, you will see, not to be grateful for the bad, for the evil, but be grateful for one thing, one light, and hold on to that. I remember when I was there, I thought, this home was built by somebody who gave it to this man as a gift because he gave them a job to build a school near his home. So because he gave them a job and people were competing, many different architects, so he gave him a gift to build the house beside his. And that's why he built it nice to put two bathrooms. And this was still a small room, a house, four bedrooms. So when I was there, a little light came in my heart and said, so maybe God made him have two bathrooms because maybe he was planning to protect me in one of them. And the devil is like, you are not too important. No, God will not plan all that for you. You nothing. I know, that bad voice will be there to remind you, you are nothing, you are not that important. Who is not important among us? Who among your children is less important? They are all important. We are the children of God. God loves us all the same, no matter what. Actually, he even cares more about the one who is going through trouble. Just like my dad will do, and my father loves me, but my God will love me even more. The Bible tells us so. We have to believe in that. So anyway, we sat there and I thought about all that. That was really little light, just like, maybe. But the devil was succeeding in tearing down that dream and that light. So we sat there. The man told his children that he lost the key of the bathroom, so they didn't even come to use it. But there was a lot more thing. I remember like the guy who was working in his house, he suspected it, and he would try to come at the window. And when you see somebody, you see his shadow, the mind takes you so far away. Maybe he will say something. Maybe he will come. Oh my God, so you keep thinking about the worst thing can happen. I literally actively, by my own decision, have to think of the good by prayer, remembering that God is almighty, remembering that he can do anything. So I had to push away that bad thoughts was there. So we sat there. I remember a few days later, he was able to bring us food, and the food he can afford to give us was the leftovers of his children, and the food they ate and mashed and threw in the garbage, and he would bring one plate, and we'd all share that, eight people. That's what he could do, not that he wanted to give us that. But at the end of the week, I thought I have had it. To know that somebody can even think about putting you through that pain, we are sleeping on the top of each other. We don't know what is coming tomorrow. We are hungry. I can't shower. I can't brush my teeth. I can't talk for a whole week. I thought I would die if I spend one more day. And I was overcome by anger. Anger I cannot put in this room. And the thing is, I thought I had a good reason to be angry. So there was no limit to how bad I can get angry. I would be thinking about what they were doing to us, and I start to think, and suggestion came to my head. I would be a soldier, and then I would destroy my body, and I would just like throw bombs all over the country, and I'm sweating out of anger. Okay, so then I would just maybe just like shoot everybody, and I'm like, my blood is running out of my thoughts. My heart is beating faster out of my anger, only my thoughts. And let me tell you, when you're angry, you can be very creative. Oh yeah. You think about things you can't really do in real life, but your mind takes you there. I have killed people in my head. I am guilty as those who did. I have bombarded the whole country. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm still here. I haven't done nothing. And yet my heart is racing. I didn't do nothing yet. And then I'm thinking, what started to scare me? I will be having a headache all the time because of my anger. My stomach will be aching from anger to fear. Then I will be having a diarrhea out of fear and anger. And then I will think, it's only from my thoughts. I've not touched anybody. How are my thoughts managing to raise my heart? And that alone started to scare me. What is going on with my body, with my thoughts? You mean things can change here and then can drive this body? And that was scaring me. I have a headache, but I have a good reason. Okay, good reason, but who is suffering? It's you, no matter what good reason you have. So I'm thinking about that, but I don't know what to do. I start to pray, Hail Mary. Oh no, I can't pray because I'm too angry. So I was just like starting one prayer, letting go. And I remember one time when the priest, the pastor came to give us food, out of desperation, I can't even share what I had inside my heart. I grabbed his feet and asked him, can you just put a radio outside so we can hear what's going on in the country? He was kind, he shushed me quickly because nobody in his family knows we are there. He have 8 people in his bathroom and nobody knows. We are listening to everything they're saying. So he was kind, he put 3 different radios outside, different channels, and I could not believe what was going on inside the country. You know, we had another proverb in Rwanda. They say, pain heals pain. If a child is crying, yeah, give her more reason to cry. She will forget about what she was crying about. In some cynical way, that's horrible to use, but somehow, it's almost like you're trying to tell somebody, you're crying for this? Like I was saying, if it gets worse, what will you do? So save your tears for now. But yours might heal if there no one come by later. So anyhow, we are sitting there, and I never forgot the day they came to search. I am thinking, this is the worst pain I have gone through. I can't pray. I can't formulate any words because of my anger. And I never forgot the day they came to search for us. The government have given orders to go everywhere and kill everybody of my tribe. Not anymore from the private radio or national TV, national radio, government leaders, government ministers will go out and say, do not forget even children. Children of snakes are snakes. Children of cockroaches are cockroaches. They kill people in public places who run to stadiums, who run to churches. Now they started to search every home. In every village, they formed 300 to 400 young men who will go home by home to search, to see this, and to see hiding. You think your pain was bad, the pain was bad to be in one room for a week, but to know that somebody is there in a 4-bedroom house, they are there, is a matter of seconds before they find you. And if they find you, they will cut you in pieces, maybe rape you, maybe keep you for how long, God knows. They did every evil possible to kill people. It was the worst thing I have known, and I realized how that week was not so bad, actually. I remember I was stretching. I looked through the window. I saw something I thought was 1,000 people. There were 300 to 400. They were dressed in banana leaves. They all had all kind of arms, long spears, machetes, guns, grenade. They are full of, you know, banana leaves, all their skin, just to look scary. They came inside and started to search everywhere you can think of. What I remember happened to me, I remember it was like 1,000 needles are going through your body because you know it's over. You are laying down in the fire and you are not dying. I remember feeling like I had two voices over my shoulders and one voice is telling me, open the door, end the torture, it's too painful. And really, that was not to me. It was, now I recognize it, a devil's voice, but it was like reasonable. What do you think? Why wait? Then the nicer voice, somehow, something was telling me, do not open the door. Ask God to help you. Remember who God is? God is Almighty. You know what Almighty means? It means He can do anything. You know what anything is? This is one of those things, anything. They might see you, they might not be able to touch you, if God wants. They might touch you, they might not be able to see you. You know what it is to have God on your side? Ask Him to help you. He said it in the Bible, ask, shall be given. Have trust, just small as mustard seed, mountains will move. And I'm thinking of that, but on the other hand, something's like, but they're right here. In that second, I remember I lost sight of how I believed in God before. Do you ask God before the tragedy happened, after, or when is it not too late? Like, can I ask Him now? When is the right time to ask? Can He hear me? I completely lost it. I couldn't know how to talk to God. Is He in heaven? Do you scream outside? Do you talk in your heart? But I remember turning to the nicer voice because I didn't have much time. And I remember asking God, if you are there, not as a Catholic, not as a Christian, from a child to a father, from a creature to a creator, I remember asking God, if it is somebody who have made all this, if it is somebody who have made the ground I'm standing on, even somebody who have made my body, my skin, even somebody who control my breath, I am begging you, just show me a sign that you can hear me. If you can hear me, I promise you, you show me the sign, I will never doubt your existence anymore. I might never understand how you work, why things happen, including this one, genocide, babies and innocent people dying, but I promise you, I will try to find out why, more than who are you? Are you even there? I remember asking for a specific sign because I didn't want to miss out the chance. I remember asking God, if you are there, don't let the killers find the door of the bathroom. In a four bedroom, 300-400 people missing out that door, it's only by miracle. But if you are God, and I'm asking you, I'm this not to be a brat, I'm asking because I truly want to know, can you hear me? I ask Him, don't let them find the door of the bathroom, just to show me a sign that you're there, not because I won't die, everyone dies, but just show me you can hear me, just today. I think after that, I fainted. The good God knew I couldn't handle those two conversations. I didn't hear nothing that happened until about 5 hours later, the man who was hiding us came to the door. We all jumped. We thought it was the killers. He told us what happened. He said about 100 of them went around the house to make sure no one jumps out of the window. Another number went in the ceiling of the house with flashlights to make sure there's no one hiding there. They went on the roof of the house to make sure no one is laying down there. Under the beds, in every room, in the closet they searched, they even opened suitcases to make sure there's no babies hiding. At last, one of the killers came right to the door of the bathroom. The man told us, I was shaking, I was sweating. They could have looked in my face. The man touched the handle. Before he opened, he told the man who was hiding us, he said, you know what, we trust you. You are a good man. You can't hide these bad people, the snakes, and you are a good citizen. We will come back, but you are a good one. You are one of us. He turned around and left. So the man didn't come to see us because he didn't want anybody to even suspect that there is anything until 5 hours later. And when he came, he told us, I remember he said, I don't know what are you praying, how you are praying, but whatever you are doing, keep doing it. He said, I don't understand why they didn't open the door. Well, we couldn't even tell him what was going on in our hearts. It was just a shock of my life. But what happened there, without a shadow of doubt, I knew there was God. It is all I needed. I asked him to give me the Bible because I wanted now to find who is God. Okay, now I know, but then what do you do about that? I wanted to know who is God now that I can believe. I read the Bible, not again how we read it sometimes, just to ask, what do you want? What do we do? Where do we come from? Why did you create us? What are we supposed to do? Where do we go after this? So what do we do here? Everything highlighting. I remember reading the story of the Daniel in the den of lions. And he is there, and the lions didn't eat him. And I'm like, God, you are capable to close the mouth of the lions? Wow, I want to be on your side. And then I remember reading a lot about Job, what he went through. He was his wife, his children, everything he owned. And he still loved God. And actually, he loves him. I said, so people you love actually can go through tragedies. So this relationship doesn't mean that everything have to go through, you know, the way we want. But this man, Job, never lost his peace. He just had his peace no matter how sad he will become. No matter how many things will fall apart, he still loved God. So those things really strengthened me. And any time I opened the Bible, it was like every page was written, love your enemies. Oh, I will close the page. No, no, no. You don't know what I'm going through. I will open another page, pray for those who persecute you. Not in my case. Let's go to the next page. Everything was like, love, love, love your enemies, pray for those, and forgive 77 times. I'm like, oh, that's a lot. You don't know my situation. I was like reading good, but also closing many pages. And then I remember thinking, well, if you say you believe in God, you truly better be. And then you can try to do what he's asking. I was terrified to be asked to forgive. How do you forgive somebody who's trying to kill you? Someone who may be trying to kill your mom, your dad, your neighbor, everybody who look like you. How? It did not make sense. But now that I knew that God was there for sure, I took the rosary my father gave me when we were separating. That's the only thing I left with. He handed it to me. Oh, it was like something was saying, in case I'm not here, this is where you will hold on. Whatever you need, I want to be able to give, and this is how you get it. And it was just not an easy separation when he handed me the rosary, but I said, nah, that's me talking to myself. No, 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 he will be there. But it came handy a week later. Now that I knew God was there for sure, I remembered what Our Lady told us, pray the rosary daily. You don't discuss with heaven. You don't tell them, well, maybe. No, no, she said, pray your rosary daily. So I said, okay, now let me just try to be a good child and obey. So I pick up my rosary and I prayed it. If I can put it in words, it was like the first rosary, one rosary takes about 20 minutes. It's really, to me, many people say, well, this is not just for Catholic. Well, many Catholics sadly don't even say it. But I always tell many people from many religions, like, this is the Bible. It's the summary of the New Testament. Don't let Catholics steal this blessing from you. Okay, if you don't want it, too bad. If you don't want this treasure, too bad for you, but you will use it. Our Lady not only tell us how to pray, but she give us promises. For those who pray the rosary, nothing you ask for shall be impossible. That is a promise from the Queen of Heaven and Earth. For those who pray the rosary, I will protect you from the attacks of the devil. That is huge. I promise you heaven for those who will pray it from your heart. But more than anything, any obstacle you go through, I will give you clarification, I will help you. That is huge. And I started to think about all that now that I truly can say I believe in God. Now, show me what to do. Tell me what to do, because I do believe now. So I start to say it. The first rosary took me 20 minutes. It was like I moved from the bathroom to a place of air. I can breathe. Oh, I'm thinking about something else that is not about killing people and revenging and how bad it will be, how next they will come to search. I felt so good. And then I stopped for like 5 minutes. It was the pangs of hell were back. Oh, they missed you because it was just luck. They will find you next time they come back. I'm like, no, I don't want to hear that. Let me say the rosary again. So I say the rosary to hide away from my poisonous thoughts. I say the second one, I stopped, the devil was back. No, no, let me do again. I had nothing else to do. I had all my time. I ended up saying the rosary all day to shut away the devil from morning until night until I can fall asleep. I remember it became a habit, and then one time I said, let me see how many rosaries I'm saying every day. I realized I was saying 27 rosaries every single day, and I used to complain about saying one rosary. Yeah. And then I had to add another 40 Divine Mercy chaplet because I wasn't falling asleep at the same time. So 40 Divine Mercy chaplets are short, thank God. I'm sorry. 40 Divine Mercy added to 27 rosaries. It took me from 6 in the morning until about 10 o'clock at night. When I am completely tired, like somebody coming from work, and I would just fall asleep in the same bathroom, and wake up in the morning, like fighting with the devil, who gets in my head first, God or the devil? Okay, grab the rosary in the name of the Father, I'm covered, I'm under God, so I start the rosary again. I was literally fighting and running away from the devil through the rosary. So as I kept praying, I never expected the changes that would happen. And that is really, it have helped me to respect the words of our Lord and to respect the words of Our Lady, our Mother. Because like I said, when she said do something, she knows beyond what she means. She knows what we can get from that we cannot even know. I wasn't trying to forgive people when I started to say the rosary. I just was, okay, what do I do? Our Lady says say the rosary every day. Okay, let me say it. Oh, it feels good, let me keep saying it. But I didn't know what else was going to happen. So as I'm praying, anytime I wasn't praying from my heart, when I was praying from my heart, it felt good. I was where Jesus was. I was in the Golgotha. I was where they killed him. I was there with Our Lady. I would go back where he was born in Bethlehem. I was there thinking and really be present. But once I started to become routine, I started to think about other things when I'm praying. And then when I started to let go the focus, the devil find a way too. So I'm thinking about people who are killing us, and then, oh my God, I will kill them too. And then, oh, they will rape you, they will cut you, oh, they will find you tomorrow. I'm like, I'm saying our Father who are in heaven, and I'm thinking about killing and being raped. What is this happening? I'm sure you go through those moments. Sometimes I'm cooking for my children when I'm praying, oh, Hail Mary. I'm like, why am I praying? And yet I'm thinking about the food I'm going to cook. It is up to us to bring back our attention, our focus. The temptation will always be there to take you away from the focus. But then I said, okay, what am I going to do? The devil find a way to come to my prayers. Something said, mean every word you are saying. Say it from your heart. That's how the devil will run away from you. Really, just like as simple as it is. So I said, okay. I remember especially through this prayer that changed everything. Our Lord is prayer, as you know, is a part of the rosary. So I remember saying, let me say it from my heart. Our Father, I'm like, what? What did I just say? Our Father? Oh, but that would mean the Father of everybody, but he's the Father of the good people only. He can't be the Father of the killers. Something said, well, let's think about that. If one of your brothers does wrong, you have 3 brothers. Does your father stop being their father? actually, heroes sleep over the one who is misbehaving. I said, okay, I can take that. Okay, he's the father of the good and the bad, fine. Our father of the bad and the good, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. I'm really meaning every word until I got to these words. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. I can hear these words, I'm like, what? As I forgive, I'm saying that? I'm lying to God. I have not forgiven. Anytime I say those words, was like the picture of everybody who have heard me and trying to hurt me is right there. There were many, 8 million people. Forgive us as I, no, I don't mean those words. Now I know that God listened to my heart. Now I know God is real. I cannot lie to him. Lying to him would be like lying to a friend when they know you're lying to them. You will lose that friendship. So better say the truth. But I'm like, how do I say the truth when I don't mean it? And how do I mean it when I don't even want to mean it? It's just like such a conflict. Well, I had a better idea. Some things said, well, you can skip that part of the prayer. then you're not lying. So bad. Oh, Jesus must have had fun with me. Trying to trick him, it doesn't work. But I want to be truthful because he looks inside. You can lie to somebody outside, but you don't lie to the one who looks from within. So I'm okay, let me skip the words so at least I know I'm not lying to you. I skipped the words, and guess what? I felt so much better. Anytime I reach there, forgive us, but not them, but let me go to the next part. And I felt so much better. I am not lying to God. We are all in good terms now. So I kept praying, and I'm begging him, protect us. Please don't let them find us. You see, I'm not lying to you too. You know, everything is good between us. Until I got to this part one time. After I got used to it, God is so gentle. He really will work through our weaknesses. He will work through us falling and rising as long as you're still focusing on the ahead of yourself, growing. He will be there. So as I was about to skip that part of the prayer one time, never expected this moment to happen. I felt it was like something nodding my shoulders and reminding me, hey, I hope you know our Lord's prayer is not man-made. It's Jesus himself who gave those words, word per word. Look in the Bible. The one you believe is God, the one you believe cannot lie, the one you believe cannot make a mistake, the one you believe knows the past and the future. If I were you, I wouldn't try to edit his prayer. I was angry with him now, with myself maybe. I'm like, no, I don't want to know that. Yeah, the more we know, we are more responsible. But what do we say? He didn't know. What do you tell God? I need you, but I don't want to give you this. I don't want to pray this, but I want you so much. Help me out. What do you tell him? I can say this laughing today, but that time it was like my world was crumbling. It was the first time in my life I understood the meaning of surrendering. When you don't know what to do, I don't have to pray, I don't have to forgive, I don't have to be without the prayer, because if I lose, then I'm not myself. What do I do? I felt like Jesus was saying, you don't have to know how to figure things out all the time. It's okay to give it to me. Just admit it's difficult. I don't know how to do it. Even including your own self. Just let me know I can't forgive. Help me. It is all I'm looking for. Let go that struggling like you're holding on. Let go. Give it to me. With that, I remember going on my knees. If I had any place in the bathroom, but that I felt like, it was like you feel so defeated, but in a good way, almost like somebody is holding you. You're not yourself anymore. And it's okay, you can trust and just be in his hand. knowing that you don't know how to. It was like I went on my knees and I begged him, put my hands up, completely gave up my fight, and asked him, if you know how to forgive, help me out. I would like to, but my dear God, how? Give it to me. Let me do it for you. Just ask. From that moment, I put back the prayer. Anytime I reach that part, I would completely humble myself and ask Jesus, help me to forgive. I don't know how to. I am saying this part out of obedience, not because I know how to, because it doesn't make sense to me. How that can happen? I kept praying like that. It felt much better to another level. I never thought there would be a chance ever God can ever make my heart understand. I thought maybe he would take me to heaven, just forgive me with that weakness that I can never change. But as one time I remember I was on the fifth sorrowful mystery, praying the rosary as I did every day from morning until night. But this one time, not like any other time, I started to meditate on Jesus dying on the cross. When he's there, he have his hand stretched. I just took it from the Bible to my imagination, not from the movies or from the picture you see him. I'm like, wow, let me see how that was like. My goodness, somebody, he must be hungry. He must have been shaking. He had been tortured all day. He didn't sleep. He was in the garden agonizing. Then they catch him in the morning. They beat him so badly. He carried the cross. Just imagine what that would be for another human being. He must have been so weak. He must have been sweating, trembling. And now he's hanging on the cross. And then I'm like, oh my God, and his mother is there. I mean, it's one thing to suffer. It's another to see somebody who loves you, especially your mother, watching you, because her suffering becomes yours. I'm like, oh my gosh, this must have been terrible for these people. And actually, I started to feel like the bathroom, I'm still hiding, he's dying, and his mother is watching him. My mother is not here. My goodness, this is bad. And I'm watching that, I'm like, okay, let me see what happened. He have done nothing, nothing to deserve that. He's completely innocent. I am human. Who knows what my sisters have done? Who knows what I have done? I can deserve that, but what about him? And that really started to make me feel just small around the whole thing and what I have been feeling. And then he had the power to stop it. He could have said a word, blinked. Everybody could have been dead, those who were trying to kill him. He had the power in his hand. He held so that it doesn't hurt them. If you gave me the power in that bathroom for 1 second, I would have killed 8 million people. And now we have it all the way. He's just like, why? And I remember asking him, why? First of all, why did you have to come through the pain? You could have saved us by one word. You could have come 5 minutes in the world and save us and go back. Why 33 years? Why live through poverty, the gossip against your mother, your family, all the rejection? Why? You know what I felt? I felt like Jesus was talking back to me in tears and trembling. I did all this because I loved you. Because I wanted to show you, if ever you go through close to what I have gone through, remember, I was there before you. If you are ever rejected, if you are ever not well loved, remember, I was there before you. Learn from me. How did I behave? Did I want to curse people? Did I want to kill people? Did I even use the strength I had? Learn from me. And that humbled me. You know the worst thing, another worst thing I learned from that moment? You know when they tell you are not good enough, you are too big, too small, too big, too light, too dark, too this and that? The worst thing is not that people say those things. The worst thing that we believe them. And then we start to run away from the light of God. We become shameful. We don't want to, we don't think we deserve to be loved because we think we are so bad. And I had my own in that moment thinking I was there. I mean, they're trying to kill my whole tribe and they are succeeding. I thought somewhere behind, maybe something is wrong with me. Maybe something is wrong with us. Maybe really we deserve to die. There is always something there, even if you deny it, and that kills you. And I felt like Jesus was saying, am I less because I am rejected? Am I less because I am on the cross? Do you think I'm God, less God, because of the suffering I am going through? No, I am more. Then I'm like, but maybe me, I'm a sinner. Why did I die? So that you know you can, you are forgiven over and over any time you come here. I did not come from heaven for the righteous. I came for sinners. And you were among them. It's okay, my child, let it go. All the plans to kill, everything you have been, let it go. And I remember as he's dying, all that gave me back my self-esteem. Jesus went through it, and I'm thinking I can't go through any rejection. Who am I to say so? Then I remember when he was dying and he said, the word that broke my heart open, forgive them, Father. They don't know what they do. It wasn't the first part. Forgive them, Father. I wanted to forgive, but how? It was a second. They don't get it. You trying to hate them, it does not change their hearts. You can kill them a million times. If the same evil is there, it will continue to go rampant and more in them. It does not change one thing. They don't get it. Maybe if you let it go, you can pray for them. If you are praying for me to save you in the bathroom, why can't you pray for them to change? It was almost like the world was divided in two parts. A part of hate and a part of love. A part of love are people I saw there like Mandela, people like Mother Teresa, people like you who are trying to improve your life, who are trying to be better every day. All of us, I hope, I'm seeking every day. And on the side of love are people who are revengeful, who are trying to hurt each other. Oh, you did this, I will do this to you too. There's people like Hitler, people who are causing the genocide in Rwanda. We're like, oh, there is a chaos here, bad, bad. And there are people here who are coming from this side to the side of love, thanks to people like Gandhi, who would take any beating and still stand up for the love. People like Mandela, who would stand up for truth no matter how much he suffers. People like Mother Teresa, St. Francis, they are standing all here. When I saw that, I felt like Jesus was telling me, where do you want to stand? With Hitler or with Mother Teresa? With Mandela, no matter what he suffers. With people like the saints. And when I saw that, I wanted, of course, to be on the side of love. And I remember thinking, okay, I can pray for these people to change if that happens, but I think some people just are bad like that. They never change. And I felt like Jesus was asking me a question I want to ask you, especially the adults here. Who among us have not done one thing or two or more? And the moment you do it, you think like, so what? What's wrong? Oh, I'm defending myself. I'm doing what I want to do. And a year later, you wake up and you go like, what's wrong with me? How can I react that way? How can I do that? How can I say that to somebody? I broke their heart. Or whatever thing you did, but you can't regret it. When I realize that I have many moments in my life I regret, actions or words I say, and then later, oh, that was wrong. You realize the pain you caused somebody. That's when I said, you know what? If I can change, who am I to say another human being does not have that capacity? Let me truly pray for them, truly from my heart, rooting for them, knowing that anybody is capable to change. If I can change from wanting to kill people, I am here now wanting to pray for them. Why not them? They can change. Not just forgive them, but actually love them enough to believe that they can change. When I saw that, it was like a huge luggage was lifted from my shoulders. I felt free. After that, it was like the bathroom became a nice place. It was smelling nice. And there was like flowers, it was beautiful. I was just like floating from the ground. I can think of someone who was killing and know that I don't have to go to make myself a victim in their hands to let them kill me, because forgiving, it does not free them from the wrongdoing they're doing. They still have to go through their own journey. I'm not going to stand in their face, and I know what they are doing is really bad and hurting many people, but I realize that the day they will wake up and see what they have done, oh my God. Do you know what it is to wake up and say, I have killed 10 people, begging me for mercy? You know what that day will be for that person? I started to pity them, to really pray for them, for God to help them. Even just with that memory when that happened. When I started to pray for them, truly from my heart, rooting for them, that's when I realized this must be what they call forgiveness. I am not angry. My brain was free. You know, when we're angry, we can't help this and that and that, and you end the cycle of thinking what may happen and what you can do and or what happened alone, and then you stop and you go back again. It becomes a trauma. It becomes a sickness. But when you let go, when you know you have forgiven, you think about it, it's not affecting you anymore. And you know it is wrong. You know you have to protect yourself from that person, but it's not affecting you anymore. I felt so free. Those who read my first book, Left to Tell, I started to learn English when I was still in the bathroom. I would never have gone there if I have not come to let go of the anger. I saw the world as beautiful. I started to see how I was going to hate children who were not even born yet because I hated the whole tribe. All the wrong was going to happen to me. I saw it right there. My eyes were open. We ended up staying in that bathroom 3 months, from April until July. I was hoping that when I come out, maybe my parents, somebody might be still hiding. But the very first night I came out, my heart was free from anger. But the very first night I found out everybody in my family was killed. Everybody. I was in the refugee camp, the war was over, they drove us somewhere to sit. And I remember in an open place, no beds, just open place. And I sat with somebody who knew my family. And we talked and I asked him if he knew anyone, if anything happened. He told me one by one. My dad was killed, my mom, my two brothers, my grandma, my grandpa, my aunts, my uncles, my neighbors, my schoolmates, my best friends, everybody was killed. A million people was killed in a period of 3 months. Everywhere was dead bodies. The homes we owned, everything was destroyed. Nothing was there, not even a picture to remind you what life was like 3 months before. Many times I wanted to die and just crush and go, but I felt like there was like a giant hand of God in my chest. And something was reminding me, remember me in the bathroom, praying, I am sitting here with you. Talk to me. Tell me anything you need. I will give it to you. I'm the Almighty who doesn't only make you forgive, but who can answer any prayer. Ask me anything. You need a friend? Talk to me. You need food to eat? Talk to me. You need a home to live in? Talk to me. And I will literally take a pen, write to God as a father, accepted that there is heaven, much better place where our people go, and I will just write to him, I need shoes to change. I need clothes to change. I need a t-shirt. I need a friend, somebody to talk to. And slowly, one by one, my life came back together. This will take me another maybe 2 hours or more to speak just the miracles. I wrote a lot in my book. The first job I got, without knowing somebody. The home that offered me a room, without knowing anyone. Just you writing on the paper, I am saying the rosary, asking Our Lady, help me, and everything come by. And that really taught me, God really hears us. Sadly, when we have so much in our life, we tend to take them for granted. We tend to be blind and not to see the hand of God. You are here by the grace of God. If I was looking, if I wanted to share so much and you come, I find you, I'll be thanking God so much. But because you are here as a gift to me, then I might take it for granted. And yes, I can choose to jump of joy just meeting great people like you. I can be happy just to have a speaker, microphone to be able to speak loud, because my voice couldn't reach all of you. I can choose to see all these blessings, the light, the air condition, to be able to be here with everything, to see the clock, to see this nice, beautiful picture, this building. We don't even know who built it. And yet we are here enjoying it. These chairs, God knows who made them, but they are the gift we don't have to ask for, given to us by God. If only we can be grateful, life will be so much better. It really makes you happy. So despite of all that I have lost, I thought and I felt through this rosary, God was showing me every day how much He was so near to me. To this day, how I publish my book, anything I want, I go on my knees and pray my rosary. Go to Mass, receive the Eucharist, go to confession, because we have to keep this clear. Confession is the most healing thing. We have to keep this heart clear. We have to forgive again and again. Forgive those we know and those we don't know. I always feel like when we don't forgive, there's like a shadow we put over us that the blessing of God cannot go through. We cover ourselves like this. But when we forgive, it's like we open to the light of God. And like I said, forgiving, it does not mean that you make yourself a victim. It was new for me when I was able to let go. Completely, it was new. I didn't think that would be that. I thought it meant then I'm going to hug them and then just be friends with people who are killing you. Or then I give them the right to do what they do. It was very confusing. Until the forgiveness happened, it feels like peace. It feels like love. It feels like I can see clear now. The things that were there, but I can see them now. But now I have the permission to go to work to help the situation. What we hate, we close away. We can't really help when we're angry. We can't help when we are judgmental. When you do, then you have closed the window. But if you forgive, then you open the door. When somebody comes to apologize, you can definitely reconcile because you can trust that they really apologized. But if you cannot forgive, forget about any reconciliation. It cannot happen. And in the end, like where I was the one hurting. I was the one sweating out of my thoughts. I was the one whose heart and stomach and intestines were burning because of my anger. And I was the one who was healed. And many times I have asked God, then especially, will I ever see somebody who asked for forgiveness? I came close to that many times, few times actually. And one of them, I remember after the genocide, a few months later, miraculously, I wrote this in my book, Left to Tell, I found a job with the UN, United Nations in Rwanda. 4 years later, I moved here to the United States. And I remember before I left, people used to tell me, you can't be this happy after what happened to you. I'm like, I went through my journey. You laugh, you are the one helping people, how? You trust people. How can you trust after what happened? And you trying to help people, be friends, how? You can't forgive this quickly. And that really, they caused a little doubt in my head. So before I left to come here, I went to visit the prison because I wanted to see people who killed my family and see if I can really feel normal around them, like a normal human being I'm praying for, or if it is this a mechanism of surviving. So I went to visit this man. The head of the jail is a friend of my father, was a friend of my father, who have lost 5 children and his wife. So he opened the prison for me, and he called one man who killed my brother and my mom. And I never forgot this. He was a man like many of you before, that's who I knew, who dressed nice, very respectful. And all of a sudden, I see him coming from the corridor. He was skinny, for, I mean, months. He have not shaved. His hair was upside down. He used to have a beautiful family and beautiful children. I would respect him like a father. And now one feet was swollen because they had beaten him so bad. His beer was like bad and food stuck into that because in prison, especially after the genocide, they couldn't shower. There are people who have killed a million people. They treated them bad. So it was horrible. When I saw him coming, I remember the first reaction, I cried. And I truly cried out of compassion for him. It was almost like Jesus was saying, you see what I told you? He could not have known what he was doing. Who would want to go to prison, look this way, if he could choose it? Why he didn't know? Because he didn't love. Because he chose hate. He chose hatred. He chose anger. He chose to hate, to hurt people. And that's how he ended up here. When I saw that, I cried and I reached out to him. It's almost like I wanted to free him from him thinking, oh, she hates me, everybody hates me. I reached out to him and I said, look, I forgive you. It wasn't, I didn't mean come out of the prison. I didn't know where his heart was. Or he was just like, who cares? But when I touched him and I told him I forgive him, he covered his face. I can feel something came out of his chest. And he started to lower his voice, something he was saying, and he couldn't look at me anymore. And before he just didn't care. The head of the jail was so mad. He came to me, he's like, what, you forgot what happened to us? Do you realize what we have done? You don't care about your parents? I'm like, I don't know, that's what I wanted to give him. And I realized it doesn't make sense to somebody who have not gone through the same journey as me, who lost his 5 children and his wife. So I left quickly. But why I shared this story is especially, this man came to look for me a year later at the United Nations, and he told me, I came here to thank you. I'm like, what do you mean? You thank me? I'm sorry for forgiving a killer in front of you, and you have lost all these people, and I didn't care about your feelings, and I know he killed the people, but I'm sorry. I mean, I really didn't want to do, I mean, this guy was suffering a lot too. So anyhow, he told me, like, no, I want to thank you. He said, that day I was confused. I didn't know how you can ever talk to him with love like that. And he told me, he revealed to me, he said, for all these years, I have dedicated my life to revenge my wife and my children. Every day I come and beat the prisoners, and I go home feeling better. In the morning, my anger is even more. And I beat them again. God knows if he didn't kill anybody, because he's the head of the jail. And he goes back home feeling better. The next day he comes with the same anger even more. And he said, after you told him you forgave him, I didn't see them anymore as a killers. I saw them as people. People who are lost. People also who regret and who don't know what they did, how they did it, who lost their families too in some ways. And somehow I wanted to speak to them more than beating them, to find out what happened, where the confusion came from, why they did what they did. And he said, he found out many were suffering inside for what they have done. And he stopped, he said, especially I wanted to tell you that I've given my life to revenge my wife and my children. I knew I would end up in prison too because I was hurting people really badly. And since the day I was able to let go also and be able to see them as human being, I have met somebody and I'm going to get married again. And I wanted to thank you for that chance. And of course, it is not me. It is the grace of God, the grace that touched me, the grace that touches each one of us and continue to touch people through my story. And more than anything, the grace that touched me, and I'm thankful forever. And it is the same grace that I pray that touches you. We all have something to forgive. I have forgiven that, but believe me, I go through life again and again. I go through new things. Somebody said, every pain pulls a new muscle. I go through things like something hit me hard. I'm like, I thought I forgave that, but that this new thing hurts really bad. And you have to come back again. Let me forgive this one too. I don't go back to what I forgave, but what is new, it hurts me. I still live life like everybody. And I have to forgive. For sure, I can never go back in my life and say, I can't forgive, because it doesn't make sense. It makes sense always, always. And if you can't forgive, just ask God to help you. So I made a CD. One thing I know, I went over time. I will sign a short time. I made a CD of the Rosary because I love it so much, and I think we need the tool, we need our faith to help us in the journey of forgiving. Many times, it doesn't make sense to forgive, but through the grace of God and through the hand of our mother who teaches us how to pray, many graces are given. So I made a Rosary CD. I always, whenever I have any problem, I pray the Rosary, and the answers came always. Not necessary to give you what you're praying for, but maybe a clarification that what you wanted was not good for you. Or just to let you know, sometimes we don't want something and it happens and it was a blessing. So I pray mostly for the will of God to be done. Not because I don't trust Him, but because I truly trust that He knows better. Anyway, when I do that, I pray the Rosary, I know the satisfying answer will come. So one friend of mine who is a Protestant, she told me one time, she's like, do you think I can pray the Rosary too? I'm like, yeah. Do you think it will work for me too? I'm like, of course. You guys, you better pray it. Anyway, she prayed the Rosary. She was going through a hard time. Her brother was about to be deported from the country. The next day she called me, she said, the judge came back with a positive answer. She said, it was like the judge became our best friend and gave my brother the papers to stay. She have said the Rosary all night after she learned it. And she made me do this so that I can give it to people who are not Catholic, so to teach them about the Rosary, which she had been giving. Is anyone here who is not Catholic? Who is not Catholic, who is willing to learn? Oh, this is yours. Oh, thank you. God bless you. God bless you. Even a Catholic can use it. Another one is a Seven Sorrows Rosary. This is really such a powerful prayer. Our Lady have told us in the Kibeho, it is needed more than ever today. And one of the miracles, some of the miracles I have found happening through this Seven Sorrows Rosary is a rosary that already existed. It's different from the traditional, but it does not replace it. It's just a second rosary. You have seven Hail Marys, seven sorrows. I put in a CD on a booklet because Our Lady told us, help me, my children. Three things have been happening, huge miracles. One are people have been trying to have babies, and all of a sudden, 10 years later, they have been trying. They start to pray this rosary, and they get pregnant. Another big miracle are people who have different sicknesses that are called incurable, like people who have been suffering from cancer. One lady healed. After 2 months of praying with her whole family and friends, Seven Sorrows Rosary, stage 4 pancreatic cancer. She called me, she was just blown away, and she dedicated her life to continue to help Our Lady. Another category of miracles that happen are people who heal from addictions. I never knew in my life there are so many addictions, and I have seen miracles happening through this rosary. And yes, Our Lady have told us more than ever, this rosary will change the most hardened heart and will make the most miraculous, you know, miracles happening in the world today if you devote yourself to it. So she said, help me to devote, to spread it. I am trying to help her. Is anyone who is maybe suffering from a sickness, like a cancer, that you would like, or you know somebody who is sick, who would you do? Can I give it to you? Oh, God bless you. God bless you, Father. And please pray for me, and I'll be praying for you. Thank you, Brad. Thank you. I know I went over time, but it is so good to talk to you. I feel home. I feel like I am with my brothers and sisters. It is such a joy to be with you, to share my story. I've been on vacation, but they told me today, I said, it's okay, I can break my vacation and come to be with you. Truly, it meant the world to be able to be here. But before I go, I want to remind you, please, no matter what happened to you, no matter what demon you fight, no matter what obstacles in your way, remember God is almighty. And there is hope no matter what situation can be. Through prayer, especially through the prayer Our Lady have taught us, our mother, she's a queen, she is our mother. She goes to bed with us. She sees that when we are sleeping, she watches over us. She sees us anywhere we are and is a tender, loving, sweet mother. And our Lord gave her to us to help her to reach him, to reach heaven. So whenever she said this prayer, I truly mean it. Hold on to it. There is hope no matter what you're going through, no matter what you will go through or you have gone through. And continue to let the wind push you forward, not going back. And I want to remind you, if I can forgive, and it was really bad, anyone can forgive. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.